Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the Go 24/7 podcast. I'm Matthew Bruni, and joining me once again is Shay Dixon. Shay, how are you doing today?
Doing well. You've wrapped up. Matty B, we're about to get hit by this bad weather, so we're recording this, Tuesday mid-morning. Yeah. Matty B, fresh off of his first year on the LSU beat, men's and women's, has ended. And within 2 days, it appears, he's grown a full beard for the people who are not watching on YouTube. But the man has now been home for one day and grown a full beard.
This is my off-season look.
It was a long
look.
Year.
Right. I already got the off-season look going, just, you know, fully just grow it out. And all the stress of the year is gone at this point.
All right. Well, let's be real or serious for a second. You came from North Texas. You got on the LSU beat. You covered the men's and women's team from the start. Did a great job. I know everyone listening to the podcast has enjoyed following all your stuff. So I know we wanted to start this out rehashing both sides. And let's start with the women's, because we can then segue to men and then on to the hire of McMahon. But I'll ask you before this tournament started and you saw the seeding, and let's set the tone here. This is a team that won 9 games a year ago with a lot of the same players they have right now. So Kim Mulkey, and I'll let you open up on that. You were at the press conference, but after the game, talked a lot like she did about a month ago when LSU started cracking the top 10, when she said, look, it doesn't matter how this ends, because what they've done to win 25 games after winning 9. And as she said, they were never trouble off the court. They bought into the new staff, and we saw the results, and you saw the PMAC all year. I mean, by the end, it's packed out for last night's game. We were both there, and it was a great environment, but they lose to Ohio State. Is this about what you expected? You knew the talent they had. Finishing second in the SEC, I think Mulkey said it last night, we finished second in the SEC. We beat a lot of teams we had no business beating, and we did it a bunch. So when you kind of set the stage of this, did you say it's Sweet 16 or bust? Did you say, hey, you just need to win one game and that'll be good enough? Because they drew a tough Jackson State team that hadn't lost since December, and an Ohio State team that's got one girl who's a certified bucket. I mean, her and Kayla Pointer were going back and forth for 25-30 points. So your thoughts just on how it ended. Was this about where you expected the ride to stop?
It is, but only because of Alexis Morris's injury. Like, that was the biggest hindrance and the biggest disappointment, really, was her going down with that sprained MCL, and the team was just never the same after that. Like, it reminded me of the Xavier Pinson injury for the men's, and where Pinson came back and he just clearly was never back to where he played. And it was the same thing with Lex. I mean, you really feel for her because she comes back in, she plays 14 minutes against Ohio State. She hit that 1-3 early, and I was like, maybe she can do it. Maybe she can give us some of that, you know, magic that she had early in the year where she was putting up 15 a game. But she only ends up with 3 points. I mean, Mulkey was scared to play her when they were pressing. I think that tells you basically everything you need to know about her knee situation. So with that being the case, like I picked them to, I think at full strength, they could beat Texas. Like they are a team that could have got to the Elite Eight. Without Alexis, I'm just happy they beat Jackson State. Like that's the whole thing for me. Just get out of the first round because a 14 seed has never been a 3 seed in the women's tournament. And that Jackson State team was damn good. Just athletically, they could match up. They went 8 of 11 from 3 to start the game. It's like, I'm surprised they won that game with how Jackson State played. But so to get that win, you know, it gives you 2 games in the PMAC of a postseason. And it was a great, like you said, great environment. Awesome. The support that this community has shown this program has been unreal, really. So yeah, thank all the fans that made that possible, but this team they overexceeded expectations. And I think it's fair to say that winning a game in the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2014 solidifies what they did. It reinforces what they did in the regular season. So yeah, that's my take on it. I'm just happy. And I enjoy covering basketball, as you know. So anything, having a second team to cover that's playing this well, is a lot of fun.
Yeah. And look, shout out to the girls. KP is obviously a name when referencing LSU women's basketball that we'll remember for a long time. She set a ton of records. She went out with a bang. I mean, it was her game in the second half to try to will them back. Well over 30 points. Jalen Cherry had an amazing game against Jackson State. She talked about coming back to show off some of her offensive skills. Certainly did that. But as you mentioned, Alexis Morris, who will be back next year, as Mulkey said. Now, I mean, she was at 20%. And as you said, they didn't even put her out there at the game when they were having to press. But, Ryan Payne stepped into a bigger role. Foss didn't have a great night last night, but she's someone who stuck around with this program for a while. You could go up and down the list. Awa played a good bit the past 2 games and a lot last night, especially in the second half when they tried to get back in it. So happy for the girls that they had that sort of success and were able to taste the postseason and get a win and certainly be a part of, as Mulkey said, rebuilding the culture and rebuilding, really setting the foundation. And that's what she said this team's done. And Maddie Beattie's last 2 games I was watching underneath the basket, kind of when they warm up and then sitting at the very end of the bench and right behind it was Flauge, I believe, both times, who's obviously a McDonald's All-American, one of their top signees. So you already get a sense that they're about to add some talent to this roster. And they've got, 3 signees, they're going to have a couple of transfers, I'm sure. Oh, yeah. A pretty nice foundation to start. And I think the skill level is going to rise immediately next year. But it was fun to watch. And certainly the PMAC had not been packed like that for a women's game and a women's season in a long time. They set the attendance record as well for the whole season. So yeah. Good on Mulkey. Great hire by Scott Woodward. We'll talk about another one here in a bit. But I guess we'll reverse for a minute. And everyone's talked about it plenty. And I know people are sad that Wade's gone. And now that a new coach has been hired, a lot of fans, I should say, are sad that Will Wade's gone. Mm-hmm. But now that a new hire has been made, we're kind of turning the page. But before we do, same question. Is this about where you expected LSU to tap out, not getting out of the first weekend, maybe not getting, running up against a team, which we thought ahead of time this might be a good matchup for them. But Iowa State plays really great defense, and all of a sudden they're shooting the lights out, from 3 or at different parts of the game, stretches of the game. You think, is it one of those things that after Wade was fired right before the NCAA tournament begins, you kind of stepped back and said, all right, anything they do from here is house money? Or I think there was always the anticipation that if they got out of the first weekend, which they've only done once in the Wade era, they made the Sweet 16 the other year that actually he was suspended for the postseason. I think when you saw them, they were never ranked really inside the top 15, 16 all year. So if you were going to get it out of the first weekend, it felt like overachieving.
Yeah.
They don't get out of the round of 64. They were kind of always a team ranked around the 30s, about what you expected.
Pretty much. I still think on paper they should have won this game. I mean, with how poorly they played on offense, I feel like if we just had a normal LSU performance, they probably win this game. And if we get a normal Iowa State shooting performance, they probably win this game. Tyrese Hunter for them goes 7 of 11 from 3 and hits some daggers in the second half. And you're just like, all right, there you go. It's over. When he hit that 3 over Days at the end, you're like, they win. Like, you win. Congratulations. And because LSU just didn't have that at all. They didn't have shot makers. They didn't have guys to create, really. I feel bad for Xavier, man, because it's clear he just wasn't 100% the entire rest of the way. And after the game, he was just like, he said he sucked after, since coming back from the injury, which I thought was kind of harsh, but he wasn't playing well. Murray 3 of 8, Monty 3 of 9, like Tari 5 of 9 is your best player, but he's always in foul trouble. So yeah, I still think they should have won the game. I think that loss is disappointing, but Iowa State is beat Wisconsin in the next game, so they're very formidable, as we know, the Big 12. But yeah, just to, you know, to make the tournament and then to have to play under those circumstances is tough. So you give them a little bit of a pass, but at the same time, you wish this team would have at least realized its potential in that first game.
I feel like for LSU fans and maybe in basketball circles, certainly, and we'll see where the Matt McMahon era goes, the new head coach that Scott Woodward has hired from Murray State. But Wade had gotten this team competitive again. And obviously he's gotten into hot water with recruiting, but the reality is that they were setting themselves up to where this year's team without Adam Miller, it became, okay, how far can you go? But next year, and I feel like, you know, the Wade era ends, but next year would have been, you're bringing in, you know, multiple five stars. You're got a guy like Adam Miller coming back. You've got Gaines and Murray and, you know, Milani and all these potential different guys all set to come back again. I mean, you were going to lose Days and Pinson. You've got Fudge, who never really found that footing this year, but you knew has a high ceiling. You've got O'Neal, who started to seem like he was turning a corner. Certainly they would have flirted with the, yeah, right. You've got Efton Reed, who, you know, after another year of development, you felt like, okay, he could be really, you know, solid for you in year two. And bringing in maybe another transfer, whatever it might be, you thought, okay, this is the team that's going to be the best that they've had in the Wade era, certainly, but the best that LSU's had in a while in terms of depth, in terms of starting five. And now as we kind of transition into this new era, a lot of that you got to presume and is kind of tossed out the window. And I guess this will also be a segue into starting to talk about a new hire. But right now we don't know what's going to happen with anyone currently on the roster. And we've already seen everyone, both signees have decommitted. Marvel Allen, their five-star for next year, is decommitted. Johan Trehor, who didn't sign but is committed for this class, hasn't said anything yet, but there's been a lot of smoke around Auburn and other teams. And clearly, it's a blood-in-the-water moment. There's an expectation, I think, that LSU fans, correct me if I'm wrong, should take into this, even after the hire of Matt McMahon, of anything you can salvage, and you can probably bet on salvaging zero from the recruiting class that they had. I mean, what, four guys total? I'd imagine, unless they're flipping one of these guys back, which I don't think that they probably will. And with Trayor, I mean, there's just, it's not like college football. There's so many options to go out there and play at a big level, or get a chance at the big dance or postseason play, or put your name in the NBA spotlight. And because of that many options and the uncertainty at LSU, and are they getting any sort of postseason ban coming, which I think is important in recruiting? I mean, a loss of scholarship or two could hurt, but in the NIL era, does that change that? Can you make up for ground that in, you know, in that way, in any, you know, shape, you know, form or fashion? You can't, NIL can't do anything for you with not being allowed to play in the big dance. And if a kid's one and done, or wants to just come in as a transfer for a final year, he wants that opportunity. So I'm going in with expectations that the recruiting class is completely gone. And even if you convince O'Neal and Fudge, or O'Neal and, you know, Murray or Gaines, you know, two guys or one guy, huge win. Yeah, I mean, that's a huge win, because I'm moving under the expectation these are all Wade's guys. I don't know if any of them are going to stay. Yes, I think it's pretty good that Scott Woodward got the hire in so that he can go to work on the current roster. But as soon as Wade was gone, the feeling around the program was all these guys are about to leave. And I think you can even say, can Matt McMahon convince him to come back? For me, it's still tough, because if they don't know if they can play in a postseason, if they don't know what the penalties are, you know, the clock is ticking on all these guys, their eligibilities, or their, you know, aspirations to play one more year of college and go pro. It all gets shorter by the day. So I'm moving forward, and I don't think it's an indication of how good of a recruiter Matt McMahon is, his current roster. It's going to be a rough year when you look at what they had, what we thought they were about to be, and what they're actually going to be next year.
Yeah, there's a few ways of looking at this, and I think we have to remember this team has now made the postseason 3 straight years, right? So if there was a postseason ban, this is a group of guys that is used to playing and in meaningful games, right? And so with that being the case, I do think it does something, and at least to the players' approach of coming back. And the second thing we have to remember is Will Wade did not recruit Louisiana kids. He didn't recruit kids that are close to home. This isn't the same thing as in football, right? You can go get a 5-star anywhere in the country, as we saw with Julian Phillips, with Johan Troyer. And these are just players that they don't have ties to Louisiana in that way. So they're not playing for the state per se. Obviously it's a piece of them whenever they play here, like Darius Days from Florida playing for LSU, loves Louisiana now. But it's, to me, like if you look at a guy like Efton Reed, I don't look at him and be like, oh, well, there's X, Y, and Z reasons for him to stay. I think he could get offers elsewhere, but I don't see why he would stay. So that's why the feeling we had was, all right, who's leaving? When are they leaving? Like, we're going to be ready when they do leave, but nobody's left yet. And so now we're just kind of waiting. Did Scott Woodward tell all of them, can y'all just wait for a second until we hire somebody? Let him come in and talk to y'all, and then you make your decision. And that's kind of what I feel like is going on right now. I feel like Woodward and them were just like, just give us like 1 week. If you don't like the hire, if you don't like him, or not even if you don't like him, if you just want to explore your options after he talks to y'all, then go ahead. But like, Tari Eason hasn't even like declared for the draft yet. Like, we nobody's said anything. So I think McMahon will have an opportunity to keep them. But to your point, if they leave, it is not an indictment on his recruiting ability. In my opinion, I'm going into this with a complete clear canvas. Like, it's, nobody has to stay in order for me to have an opinion on McMahon. So I'm anticipating all the recruits gone. My mindset is that everybody's gone. It's a clear canvas for him to work with at this point. Whoever stays is bonus for him. But other than that, he's going to have to hit the transfer portal. He's going to have to just piece together a roster for this upcoming year and then kind of go from there.
I think it's fair. I think that it's tough for LSU fans to swallow knowing where things were going, but the reality is that's kind of where we're at. So let's rewind quickly, though. They named Matt McMahon the head coach. He gets a 7-year deal, and I had talked about this on the board, that I heard it was going to be 7 years, around roughly $3 million a year. He starts out around $2.6 million per year, and it'll go up $100,000 every year. No matter what. And then he's got incentives built in, like if he wins the SEC regular season or the SEC tournament or gets to the big dance or makes it past the first round or into the Sweet 16 and so forth. So yeah, it's under 3 million, but it's got the chance to creep up there. But I think the length of the deal, because 3 million is about what is the industry standard right now for these schools. Like Florida, for instance, just hired a new basketball coach, right around 3 million. Missouri's working towards a new basketball coach, same numbers. So this is about the expected range. I think what I kind of, we heard early on, John Brady even said this, was look for them to give them someone more than a 3 to 4 year deal, because you don't know, you can't get a great coach or, someone you really want out there if you have looming sanctions that you don't know the penalties of yet, right? Like LSU, even with firing Will Wade, in that statement, they said, this is not an admission of guilt. We're going to fight a lot of these. So we don't know ultimately what the penalties will be, but a 7-year deal carries a coach through all of that. I mean, and then you bought in to say, hey, look, you're not a stepping stone for us to, let's go hire someone, get us through this, potential probation era, and then we'll turn around the back end and hire the guy we really want. And Maddie B, you kind of heard that early on. Tony Bennett was a name who was tossed around a bunch at Virginia, who certainly is one of the top 10 coaches in college basketball, has had a ton of success. He's won a national championship. Coaches at a powerhouse basketball school and a tough conference. So that fit all the sort of standard Scott Woodward coaching search checklist things, right? Like, I'll pay a bunch of money, get a guy who's won a national championship and knows how to compete at the highest level. And when it seemed that those two sides couldn't come together, they quickly moved on. You mentioned Cleveland State's head coach. Obviously, Murray State's head coach Matt McMahon ends up being the guy. But those two were being looked at by a lot of SEC schools. Like I mentioned, South Carolina's in the mix for jobs. Mm-hmm. Florida just hired a job. Missouri was hiring a head coach. And you sort of saw the dominoes fall with a lot of people who seemingly had similar targets, as if these were kind of that core group of four or five guys who were thought to be those next guys to break through, into a big, SEC level type of job. When you look at, and you did some nice breakdowns, he comes with a 70% win percentage. And I wrote this down yesterday. Let me make sure I have this. I thought it was a good stat, at least to give you a feel for kind of the trajectory of what Woodward's trying to hire. So in the five coaches since Dale Brown at LSU, John Brady, who had some success, certainly went to a Final Four. Mm-hmm. He came in with a head coaching win percentage at 54%, replaced by Trent Johnson, who came from Stanford. He'd coached out with Utah State, I believe, comes in with a 57% win percentage as the head coach. Johnny Jones comes in. He's now having success, still coaching, but when he took the LSU job, his head coaching record's 56%. Will Wade was a big jump. When he comes in after, 4 years at Chattanooga and VCU, his combined win percentage, 67%. Matt McMahon's been at Murray State 7 years, his only head coaching job, but that's a lot of years, 70% win percentage. So you've gone 54, 57, 56, 67 to Wade, and now 70 to McMahon. It's clear winning has to mean something, right? So are you impressed just right off the bat with that? And kind of what else jumps out at you in terms of what you've seen and you kind of dug deeply into his Murray State teams over the past 7 years?
Yeah, I'm impressed with it. Obviously, Murray State's not in the SEC, not in the Big 12. Like, I watch a ton of SEC and Big 12 basketball for the most part. And so Murray State is usually only on our radar when they're in the NCAA tournament. And that is pretty often, obviously. And so when you go back and look at them, I thought it was interesting the consistency that he was able to have with and without Ja Morant, because you get that generational talent. You're like, okay, obviously he's going to win with him, right? Well, this year's team, they didn't have an NBA star. This year's team beat San Francisco in the first round, a San Francisco team a lot of people had winning. And then obviously you lose to St. Peter's, but St. Peter's, whatever, it's a Cinderella team. But to make the second round of the NCAA tournament for the second time in 7 years at Murray State, and really you can watch out those first 2 years, because I've seen at a small school, when you take over a rebuilding program, those first 2 years are kind of just getting by to a degree. So I really just look at the last 5 years, and the last 5 years they've been top, top 70, top 60 team in the country year after year. This year they were 36, I believe. And that's higher than 8 teams in the SEC. So when you combine that with what I think is, and what I've heard is, be a great X's and O's coach, a great coach in certain areas like offensive rebounding, where his team was 11th this year in offensive rebounding. And I included the stat where I think they were the 230th tallest team in the country. When you put that together with his consistency with and without Ja Morant, I look at this as, okay, he can do it on the court, but I need to see it in recruiting now. And that's, to me, in the SEC, is a significant portion of the battle, right? Getting the talent to compete. And that's what made Will Wade, while we had our questions and we had our qualms about him on the court and his play and his sets and what his offense is and everything like that, there was no questioning his ability to bring talent in. And from that perspective, I think we know that McMahon will have a high ceiling because of his basketball savvy, but can you realize that ceiling? Can you reach that ceiling with the talent? And I have no doubt that he's going to be able to bring in talent, because I mean, you look at other coaches that have gone from a lower level up to the SEC. I mean, look at Muss over at Arkansas. I mean, he has brought in plenty of talent, and now they're still dancing, in this tournament. So I think they're going to be fine. I'm really pretty high on this hire. I'm not one to usually make, brash, like, oh, this is an A+ hire, this is a D- hire. I kind of just let it play out to a degree until I learn more about him. But on paper, you can't ask for much more with the investigation, and just with the situation LSU was put in. I mean, I can't think of much better besides Tony Bennett, I guess. But even then, you know, this still has a chance at being a home run swing. And I think that's what excites me, is that he's 43, 44, I believe, and he has his career in front of him at this point. So, yeah, I like the hire on paper. I'm excited to see it. And I think that LSU fans are rightfully excited. So
I think, yep, rightfully excited. And I think they're also, I think they're still wondering, right? What are the sanctions? What will the team look like? How quickly can he rebuild the roster? I don't think Matty B, these are, and maybe you have a better feel for off seasons of college basketball, but I don't think we're going to get a lot of these answers for a while. I think that we'll see what the current team does. I mean, we already know, like, Tar Eason's going pro. Darius's days, his career's over. I doubt Xavier Pinson is trying to play any more college basketball. I'm not sure what his goal there would be. But so many other guys, they're not really NBA eligible or ready, right? You know, they're not NBA ready right now. And it's going to be about whether they want to stay here and see what happens with postseason stuff or find a new home. And finding a new home takes time in itself. And that means entering the portal and getting a feel, you know, back with who might be interested in you and all of that. So I think it's going to be a while. And then obviously there's a flip side. Who's LSU going to bring in and go out and get? I'm curious how long it will be until we hear of kind of what the fallout from the notice of allegations will be. But again, I don't think that's going to be tomorrow or next week or the next week. So getting a hire in was great. We'll get to hear from him this week. So be sure to check the site for that. We're going to hear from Matt McMahon on Wednesday. Maybe he'll touch on kind of his early thoughts on building this out and what the looming sanctions might mean. But I'm excited to, I guess, for the new chapter. Certainly I'm going to miss Will Wade. He was great to us. He was certainly great to you with how much you covered the team. So a final salute to the general. I know LSU fans are going to be rooting for him wherever he ends up. But the page has officially been turned, and Matt McMahon, it's tough to say for me. I don't know why I keep hitting the Mac.
I called you and I did not know how to say his last name. I said Matt Mac McMahon. Mahone. I said like Mac Mahone initially, and you were like, and you said McMahon. And I was like, okay, that's how you say it. And then I went on the radio later in the day and I completely forgot how to say it in my head. So I said like the new coach, like yeah, I just completely bailed enough on it.
Simple enough.
But yeah, you do bring up the point. And I think the last thing I'll say is to go back to your initial point of us being on the trajectory of like, okay, next year's team is the one, like the one that's going to make an Elite Eight, like the one that's going to really make a push in the top 10 with all this talent, and going from that to now we have no clue what next year's team's going to be. And maybe it's good. Maybe they make the tournament, but you know, if you had to bet on it right now, even if they're allowed to make the tournament, you would bet against it just because of all the uncertainty at this point. So, and again, that's not an indictment on McMahon, but it's just the situation LSU's in right now. So that type of drop in expectations is going to be, I feel like, tough for fans initially. But, you know, you kind of just have to ride with it to a degree. So, yeah, that's the last thing I'll say on that.
Yeah, well, a lot more coverage of the McMahon era coming. Obviously, the Mulkey era is off to a great start. That foundation's been laid. We'll see how quickly he can match it or try to sustain the level of interest, certainly, that Wade garnered from the fan base. That was the most butts in the seats at the PMAC as it built up, and this year being the most, certainly, in a while. So, You hate to lose that grip you had on the fan base. Hopefully he puts a good style of basketball out there and gets some players that people stick around and they can continue to compete.
Yeah, I was thinking we need a nickname for McMahon. And I don't know, I thought like the accountant or something, but then I was like, you don't want anything to do with money. We don't need anything.
Oh no, that was terrible. See, this is why you're doing this and you're not on the LSU marketing team or anything like that. Well, we've got a Matty B. He could be Matty Mac. We'll figure it out. We'll feel it out. We went a whole podcast without him talking about him recruiting Ja Morant either. And I think that's all people like really are holding on to at the moment. So plenty more to come, but enjoyable basketball season on both fronts. You hate for it to end, but for both teams, you knew the ride was going to come to an end well before, you know, the biggest games got rolling. So happy they made the tournament.
Yeah, enjoyable year, like you said, to be able to cover these teams. First year here, obviously, of course. So I enjoyed it. That'll do it for our podcast today. You can follow Shay on Twitter at Shay Dixon. Follow me on Twitter at MatthewBruni_. You can follow us on Twitter at Go247. Check out the site, like Shay said, go247.com, and become a subscriber if you're not already. So that's all we got for y'all today, and we will talk to y'all later.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a CAN model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.